Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
So good to have you with us, everybody. It's June 1st, and it's Monday, of course, and we're excited to have you here. It is hard to believe how the calendar pages are turning this year. It seems to just keep going faster and faster each year. But we're glad you have taken the time to get into this topic. Today, I'm really excited. We're talking about wholesale lending, the whole wholesale broker world. It's coming back. It's a big comeback, major comeback story of this industry here, one of the major ones, since we've watched the demise, what seemed like the demise of that segment of the industry, that channel. But it's back, it's strong, and we have with us Greg Murray, the president of Wholesale One. Very excited to his comments. We have him on hold. We've had a chance to talk to him just before the broadcast. Some good stuff. You're going to join it. You're going to enjoy it, and stay tuned all the way to the end of the broadcast. So we also just, I'll remind everybody, this broadcast is created by who? Mortgage professionals. Who? For who? Mortgage professionals. So if you're tuning in, hopefully you're a mortgage professional and you are benefiting from this. We're the proud recipient of the Progress in Lending Innovation Award. Thank you so much to Tony Garitano and all of the group there. I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, United Guaranty, who just happens to be the MI industry leader for the fourth consecutive year. Did you know that FHA, when they cut their rates, I thought it might cut into United Guaranty's or mortgage insurance premiums and start getting close to be more competitive. But still, if you compare the two programs, United Guaranty's mortgage insurance premiums are still the most competitive out there. And there's some real added advantages with this program. So when you're looking at an FHA versus adding MI insurance, make sure you check it out. And they have their performance premium risk-based pricing, and you can be sure you're getting the appropriate rate for each loan's individual risk profile. It's very important. And you can also take advantage of faster closings. You don't have to eliminate the need to deal with case numbers, FHA approval underwriters, all those things that Alice is so famously talking about all the time, the complicated world of FHA. It has also got the lender-paid mortgage insurance options, so it's a very good, along with the unparalleled service that you get from United Guaranty. Again, mortgage insurance underwritten by United Guaranty Residential Insurance Company. Also, a special thank you to our friends at Velma, stands for Virtual Electronic Marketing Assistant. We're thrilled to have them be a part of the broadcast, helping get the word out. Many of you get a notification from us about the broadcast just a little bit before the broadcast starts. They do an outstanding job of working with someone like me, who is not always the most organized, and they get it out nonetheless in a manner that works. So, great group. Really appreciate them. Joe Farr, good to have you with us. Always looking at the market. I have your website up, Joe, all the time, looking at where the market's moving. And again, rates are moving higher this morning. See it happening right here, live and in real time on my screen. Tell us about it. What's going on?
Well, we had a very clear reaction to stronger than expected data this morning. At 10 o'clock when the ISM came out, it exceeded expectations. Construction spending also came out exceeding expectations. And we saw a drop from basically the same level we ended the day Friday to down 8/32nds. And since then, we have gone even a little bit lower. We're just now down just about 10/32nds. So the strong data finally had some influence on mortgage rates. The earlier in the day, we did see core PCE come in lower than expected. It's just now, I think it's 1.3% on an annual basis, which is very, very low. And, that should have been good for mortgage rates. But, the stronger data that came out later was kind of overriding. And so we're now down that 9/10/32nds on the day.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if that has any impact on GDP as we look forward to what's happening. But personal income, that was the one that I noted was really a pleasant surprise. Zero growth last month, and then this month, 4/10 of 1%.
4/10, right.
That's good. So a little bit better, so good job. So tell us about last week. That was one of those things. Greece continues to stay in the mix, and give us your overview.
It was the main driver last week. You know, the negotiations between Greece and the ECB and the IMF and all the people that it's creditors over an extension of additional credit is really causing some havoc in the market, given that they're at an impasse, it seems. The likelihood of Greece being able to make its Friday payment is small, as maybe they don't have the ability if negotiations aren't settled and Greece isn't extended some more credit. So, you know, the concern is more what happens if Greece defaults throughout the rest of the Eurozone.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the uncertainties that go along with that are creating, you know, it's not a major, but a small flight to safety. And as the headlines come out saying the negotiations are going well, we see a reversal of what had been a flight to safety and rates rise. And then when those negotiations seem to not be doing so well, we see an improvement in rates. So Greece really did have a big influence on MBS prices last week. And the economic data seemed to have, you know, not so much.
Yeah, that's what I'm noticing. Just looking at the economic data, it's just it's nice to see us return to something predictable. At least this week, we're seeing a traditional reaction to economic news, which again, overall, it looks good today. And then we're seeing,
right.
But it hasn't been like that. But as we look forward to this week, we have some non-farm payroll numbers and.
Well, let's start. There was some good economic data last week, Dave.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah, there was.
Yeah, no, I wanted to highlight the housing data because, you know, it's we've had basically four reports, and three of the four have been good reports. The existing home sales that came out the week before last were a disappointment, but the new home sales and the pending home sales, both of which are predicated on contracts signed, so they're more current activity. Both of those were much better than expected. In fact, pending home sales were the best level in 9 years. So, you know, as we leave April with all this activity brewing, it does bode well for improvement in the housing sector in June and, well, the May numbers and for June as well. So that data was really pretty good. So this week,
do you have any sense? I'll talk about this week in just a second. But is there any sense that we saw the? I was asked this by Cavuto last week on an interview on Fox. He said, "Dave, is this good times for the housing, or is it a result of interest rates getting close to the 4%? So people are jumping on the current low rates, the perceived low rates. Historically, these are still low rates, even if they get up into the fours." He said, you know, what's this a result of? And I'd love to get your thoughts. I want to get Joe Farr's comments on that. Do you think that pending home sales number, which was such a pleasant surprise, is a result of the perception that rates are moving higher and therefore we're seeing people the fence and doing something? And that may not be a sustainable trend?
Well, I think there are two different answers to that. I do think psychologically people are going to, if they fear rates rising, it could kick them into gear a little bit earlier. But whether it's sustainable or not, I don't think that the difference between 3.75 and 4.25, if that's where we get to, is substantial enough to cause somebody that wants to buy a home to not buy a home.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's sustainable. And, yes, I do believe that the psychology probably has pushed people to go ahead and buy their house.
Yeah, that's my thought. That was exactly what I said. So I'm glad called you and double-checked. So let's talk about this week. Payroll data
this week,
in Greece.
Payroll data Friday comes out at 8:30. Consensus calls for 225,000 net new jobs and unemployment staying at 5.4%. You know, before that, ADP comes out on Wednesday, and we'll see if that indicates anything different. Included in this morning's ISM data was a very good employment component. So, you know, the first indication that we may see a good number. And then, of course, Greece is going to remain in there because, as I mentioned, Friday is the payment due date for Greece on a, it's not a big amount, it's like $300 million. I don't know if that's dollars or euros, but and whether they made it or not, or whether in between then and now, there's a meeting tonight between Merkel and a few others who hopefully will consider how to go forward with Greece and that debt. And so a lot will go on between now and Friday, I think.
No question. It'll be one of those things. I wonder if by Friday we hear says, yeah, don't worry, the check's in the mail. I wonder if that's going to be the response from Greece. So, well, remains to be seen.
Well, I don't
Joe,
think
thank
I'd
you
accept
so
their
again.
Check, would you?
I don't think I would. their ability is to write checks is a little bit impaired right now. So it's going to be very interesting. It's an interesting dynamic. And again, when we have that kind of information, it seems to trump any economic data, whether we're positive or negative here. And so it's that flight to quality always to the bonds that keeps interest rates suppressed, not necessarily going lower, but at least it keeps them from rising as we have seen them do today. Well, we're going to check back to you with you at the end of the broadcast to get an update on rates, but it's good to have you with us.
Okay.
And looking forward to having you involved in the discussion with Greg Murray later in the broadcast. In fact, thank you for introducing us to him, Greg, to us, so that we could have him on the broadcast. We credit you for this interview today, so it'll be very good. Folks, we're going to be right back after this break with Paul Molo. He just dialed in. Can't wait to get his thoughts on what's going on. They track some great stories, and we're going to have him on in just a minute. So we'll be right back after this quick break.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLine delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLine, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLine today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Good to have you with us, and it's also good to have Paul Molo with us. Paul, good to have you on the broadcast. I'm looking at your website. Jumbo originations are up sharply as you're reporting. Good to have you. How are you doing, friend?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. Maybe the jumbo market's doing better than me, though. It was interesting. Jumbo production, roughly $70 billion during the first quarter. That's up 59% from the first quarter of 2014. However, I keep in mind that the first quarter of 2014 was awful for everything. So, we're misleading the world there. But, you know, listen, $70 billion in jumbos, that's not too shabby. That's good news. You know, the question is, and there's at least one new jumbo deal that came out, which is in the short take section of IMF News today. Two Harbors is out with a new deal. So things are, coming along. We'll see. We shall see. Also, another interesting development, somewhat interesting, Redwood Trust has this joint venture jumbo thing going with the Federal Home Bank of Chicago, and they put out a release this morning saying the maximum loan you can finance through the program is now $1.5 million, compared to $720,750. It's an interesting jump. It's double, obviously.
Yes.
Keep in mind, though, I think Redwood's maximum loan volume is $2.5 million. And that program is, coming along. A lot of people who can't securitize on their own will use it. The question is, how big is it going to be? But, it's a program and it's in the jumbo sector, and that's good. A story that we broke last Friday, we sent out an alert to our readers. I've been tracking Citadel Servicing out in California, Dan Pearl Shop, for quite some time. They've rolled out a new second lien mortgage in the non-prime space. Now, what's so interesting about this is that no one is making second lien subprime mortgages, period. In fact, I would venture that the last time we saw such a product was probably 2008. That's what's interesting about it. And I talked to Dan a little bit about it last week, and you know, but before you go crazy, oh, amazing! The combined LTV on this thing is 80%. The rate is like between 8 and 9%. There's some FICO minimums. You got to be an owner occupant. There's a lot of restrictions, but still, I got to hand it to him. He's on the market with this new product, and he said the initial reaction has been pretty fantastic. So we'll see how that develops along the way. Also, a story by George Brooks about some clarifications coming out of FHA. They're working on some new things in their forms, that will supposedly help lenders sleep a little better at night when it comes to their underwriting. If they do this, and this, they'll get some relief. So that's been talked about on and off for 2 weeks now, and there's more brewing on that front. Provident made some news last week, Provident Funding in California. They signed a $9 million legal settlement, supposedly. They were overcharging minorities through yield spread premium deals through brokers. Then they put out a statement, even though they settled, they denied everything, doing any wrongdoing, and that basically, it sounded like they basically settled just to make this thing go away, but they denied all wrongdoing and said they had no knowledge of any of their brokers overcharging. And that seems to be another story or topic that you guys might want to discuss down the road about, how many of these things are being settled because lenders have had it. They just don't want to put up the legal defense, spend the money, and, if they can settle these things without...
With an uncertain outcome. Yeah, an uncertain outcome.
Yeah, so, that's a story we're going to probably get into one of these days. In the short take section, I mentioned Two Harbors, their new jumbo deal. Yep. We also heard there's a big pool of jumbo loans out there. Subprime loans that was originated by a lender. I know who it is, and I'm still tracking the details, that they put these things on their repo lines or their warehouse lines. They were hoping to have some investors, and the investors may not have bought. Something's up, and we're tracking that deal. So we'll let you know more about that. There's just official notification that merger between two federal owned banks, Des Moines and Seattle, is now a done deal. And LenderLive bought another vendor called Walls Group, LLC. They're a provider of what they call a regulatory compliance solution. So I think we're going to see some M&A in the vendor space over the next year or two. So we threw that in there as well.
No question.
So that's all the essentials today.
Well, we're going to be talking with Greg Murray in the Hot Topic segment. He's the president of Wholesale One. We're going to be getting in a little bit into talking about, not that Greg will get involved, but he's a wholesaler, and Provident's a wholesaler. I think that has some really interesting ramifications. You can say we're settling $9 million settlement and then claiming no wrongdoing. That has just got all kinds of issues written all over it for lenders that could not afford that kind of a settlement. So tune into the broadcast later, because we're going to be what does this mean?
I think Provident can't afford it, though. I think, they had some good years in there. So, we'll see. I mean, you mentioned wholesale lending, and we got into that last week. We ran our numbers, and, the broker share keeps going up. Wholesale volumes are going up. Not dramatically, but they're going north. And, you hear more and more talk where brokers are coming back and their industry's looking better and et cetera, et cetera. So we'll continue to track that as well.
Good stuff. Good to have you with us, Paul. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And look forward to having you back next week. Check it out, everybody. I don't know how many I got in there. www.imfnews.com. Paul Mallow, thank you so much. Have a good rest of the week, friend.
Thanks for having me, David. You too. Bye-bye.
You betcha. All right, let's run over to Alice Alvey. Alice, always fun to have you here getting updates on your world. That is just no small task. So give us an update, Alice.
Hi, Dave. Well, I'll give you a quick legislative update, and then as I've been trying to do is help folks a little bit with where we're at with TRID in general. So I think just from a legislative, right, that's always fun. So it's become the new four-letter word. So from a legislative front, there's an interesting bill out there. It's House Bill 1941, and then Senate Bill, there's a companion bill, 774, which doesn't happen all the time. So it's the Financial Institutions Examination, Fairness, and Reform Act. So clearly a way that the industry is trying to be able to make some standardization in the events of being audited. So trying to amend the Federal Financials Examination Council, so the FFIEC to require the financial institutions to make a final examination report within 60 days after the exit interview, right? Some of these reports can really drag out, and they spend so much time afterwards, and I say they, it could be any regulatory agency, sometimes taking so long to issue the report that in the meantime, the lender's feeling like, hey, I'm under a microscope, my actions are being monitored, I'm being restricted, and I don't even have my final report yet to say, what is it that I actually have to fix? What is it that you've cited? And I've experienced that firsthand, where in an exit interview, they'll say, oh, yeah, here's your short list, and then you get the report, and it's, oh, by the way, did we mention all these other things to you? So the bill is in its very early stages. It has some very, what I would consider to be more pro-lender approaches to making sure that the agencies are working within some boundaries. So, and it, I'm not so sure it's going to get a lot of legs, but, you know, we'll I've definitely got it on the radar. We talked a little bit last week, and I think Dave Stevens, who was on the show a week before that, talked about the Financial Regulatory Improvement Act of 2015.
Right.
Very comprehensive, trying to pull through a lot of pieces for us. Hasn't been any movement on that in the last week, and we'll keep watching for you. So listen to the prior programs to get the details on that. And then I think for the TRID update, what I want to share with folks is the movement in the industry to try and figure out how to issue the closing disclosure early, right? If you think about today, we normally would start the HUD-1 review process once we get a clear to close. And everybody's trying to look at how early can I give out the closing disclosure if my system's able to run like a dual process, right? My processor I've got a good approval. I'm not subject to a lot of things that could potentially change my forms. I mean, that's, you know, as good as it can get in mortgage banking might be 80%, right?
Right.
I have 100% at that stage. And the idea that simultaneously I can start, the closing disclosure is going to get prepared with all the borrower and lender and collect the information from the settlement agent on taxes and so forth, especially on your purchases, and try and get that moving simultaneously down a track and actually deliver it to the borrower, even at some shops are considering ahead of a clear to close. And so this varies by shop. Some companies feel, no, you have to have a clear to close before you issue that disclosure because you've got to have a firm commitment that this loan will close. A lot of companies feel I have that firm commitment earlier than that. The C2C is really just about cleanup conditions because I don't let my processors approve anything. So how that's structured and whether or not it's okay ahead of a clear to close or not really varies by company. We're helping companies kind of iron out those procedures and then, of course, get them approved by compliance and legal to make sure they're okay with it. But if you want to be able to shave time off of your closing, that's the number one solution that people are looking at, aside from going out to all your realtors and saying you need 15 more days on a contract, right?
Right.
I wanted to give everybody a heads up on that. The idea of how early can I get that CD out is one of the big topics of discussion right now, and if you need some help and ideas, we're happy to help. So that's my quick notes for today, Dave, because I know we've got a big show, lots more to cover to talk about wholesale.
Yes. And we're looking forward to it. And you are a wonderful resource to talk to and work through it. So if you're looking for some advice, just some thoughts on any of this, give Alice a call. Learn more. Stay tuned to this ad.
If you have questions about mortgage regulations, Indicom Mortgage U has free answers. If you need ideas about how to reinvent your organization, Indicom Mortgage U will share great ideas. When you need help at any step of the loan process, give us a call or send an email. The Indicom team of experts have been helping mortgage players from origination through servicing for over 30 years. Your success is our focus. Whether it's a quick question or long-term support, portfolio, conventional, or government lending, it's a competitive market. So let Indicom Mortgage U give you the edge.
Oh, yes. Love that. Good job on that new ad, Alice. Appreciate it. Let's get into the discussion here. Sam Garcia. It's good. Always good to have Sam. You can check out his website by going to www.mortgagedaily.com. Sam, good to have you on the broadcast. Give us some insights of what you're seeing and what stories you're tracking.
Hey, Dave. Thanks for having me on. Always enjoy it. This morning, the U.S. Supreme Court issued a decision in a case with Bank of America where the bankruptcy court had stripped the junior liens that Bank of America held because the first mortgages on those properties were already underwater. But the Supreme Court decided to back basically Bank of America and said that they will hold up those liens and you can't void them just because, you know, the lien is underwater. So it's a good decision. This is something that Bank of America had taken to the Supreme Court back in November. GSE refinance activity took moved higher. There were more than 203,000 GSE loans refinanced in March, and that turned out to be the biggest month since September 2014. Agency issuance for April, fixed rate MBS issuance by Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae was down 6% from April in May, and it was that's reported by EMBS. And at Fannie Mae, issuance actually tumbled 12%. But for all three companies on a year-over-year basis, we saw that there was a 70% increase. So business is still better than it was a year ago. There was a town that we reported on last week. We put out a story where they are in New York. It's Glen Falls. And basically, officials in the town have decided to use eminent domain to force lenders to settle on zombie properties. They're trying to eliminate, they say, properties that aren't being maintained well. And so they're going to use this eminent domain, which, of course, has been a hot topic over the last year, and to try to get lenders to be in a position where they have to do something or settle to get these things out of there. It's a small town, but it's just interesting that that continues to linger as an issue. Congress last week, 254 members of the House, Republicans and Democrats, sent a letter to the CFPB asking for a regulatory grace period for integrated disclosure rule. The lawmakers said they wanted to avoid disrupting the peak home buying season in August when it goes into effect, and they want to basically put it off at least until January 2016. Ocwen last week said it was going to close a servicing center in Houston, and as a result, we're looking at about 140 layoffs of servicing employees. loanDepot, they reported their first quarter production to us. They said they did more than $6 billion in first quarter originations, and that puts loanDepot on track to double its 2014 volume if they can keep that pace for the rest of the year. The mortgage
Mortgage Masters has really helped them in that. There could be something to come, a company to watch for sure. But anyway, you're about to say Mortgage Bankers?
Yeah. The Mortgage Bankers released their latest forecast for mortgage originations, and they basically lifted their first half of this year's expected refinances to $345 billion from $306 billion that was predicted a month earlier. So a little bit more optimistic outlook for refinances. And that is my my news for this point.
Good stuff. Always appreciate you being on and giving us and our listeners an update of what's happening. You have a great day, Sam. Go check out Sam's website. It is a good amount of information on there. And his data, his research is just outstanding. www.mortgagedaily.com. Sam, good to have you with us. Have a great rest of the day and week. You bet.
You too.
Andy Shell. I was just thinking of Andy Alvey as I was thinking about an ad. Andy, sorry about that. Profit Doctor, also known as, which one are you most known by, Andy Shell or the Profit Doctor?
Well, both. It depends on if it's Licking on Lending. If it's Licking on Lending, it's the Profit Doctor. If it's
the Profit
in
Doctor,
our business, then it's
right.
Andy Shell, CPA, CMB, CFF.
CFF.
Hey, Dave.
And on and on. Yeah, good to have you here. What are you tracking for us today?
Well, what's today? What is the date today, Dave? It's June the 1st, isn't that right? That's what my calendar says. And you know what that means? It means that we closed the month. Yesterday was the end of the month, you know, on last Friday, close of business. So you know what you should have on your desk very shortly is your financial statement. You should be getting your financial statements. It's time to close the books and count the sprinkles. You know, if we were making cupcakes, we'd know, and I love cupcakes. There's a place called Sprinkles in Dallas that makes the best cupcakes, German chocolate cupcakes. If we made cupcakes, we'd know how much a sprinkle costs, because that's part of your manufacturing cost, right? If you're making cupcakes, you know how much the wrapper costs, the dough costs, the eggs cost, the everything costs. So do we in mortgage banking know how much our sprinkles cost? Well, we have to. It's really not an option. And I would have to say that, unfortunately, a lot of people don't. They know how much their gain on sale is that they get from their short-term mandatory commitment. But do they really make that much all in, given the payoff cost and lender credit collection recapture? So, you know, do we really validate our expected gain on sale back to cash? And people go, well, but you can't, because it's fungible, because loans go in and out of the hedge, and so you really can't track payoffs to loans, and that's true. But over a rolling 60 or 90-day period, you can. You can track things back to actual cash based on volumes sold, and that's what we're working to help people do, is being able to count the sprinkles, even when it's something as complicated as flow deliveries, AOTs, short-term mandatory deliveries, and payoffs of a short TBA MBSs.
Yeah,
so
no question. You should be that's good. Well, it's a good reminder, everybody. I like that one ad we ran a while back. It says, it's the 10th. Do you know where your financials are? It's like, it's 10 o'clock. Do you
right.
know where your kids are? It's really a great ad, and it was really driving home the point. And if you're struggling, folks, to get your data, your financials processed and in your hand, get a hold of Andy Schell. You can reach Andy at Andy or A Schell at mbs-team.com, or I think you can go by Andy at mbs-team.com.
Yeah, I use the Andy at mbs because people always misspell Schell.
Yeah, that's right.
So, and
so,
just like
right.
Lickin. Nobody can spell Lickin. How many K's are in Lickin?
I know.
So it's David
yeah.
mbs, Andy at mbs-team.com.
Yeah, that's good. That's good, good, good. Well, appreciate you being on, sharing it with you. Folks, we got Greg Murray, who's going to be our guest right after the ad break. And I'm really excited to get into the discussion about wholesale lending, the whole wholesale channel. So stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success,
Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. It's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Good to have you with us, everybody. We have Greg Murray, who is the Chief Executive Officer of Wholesale One, a mortgage brokerage cooperative managed by a division of Altisource Portfolio Solutions. And I want to look at so many exciting questions to ask Greg in just in his business relationship there, how that's all going. But it's a new relation. It's a new business that's out there and really doing well. And I encourage you to get to know Greg and this business. He is responsible for the strategic direction of the cooperative, focusing primarily on developing a platform that ensures a competitive advantage for all its members and service providers. I've really enjoyed my conversations before the dialogue, and I can tell he based in his experience level based on his 3 decades of mortgage industry experience ranging from systems to sales and including managing retail, wholesale, correspondent, and affinity business. So welcome to the broadcast with me, Greg. Good to have you with us, my friend.
David, thanks for having me on, and pleasure to be here.
Well, I want the audience, for those of you that don't know you, let's get you introduced a little bit. You have a diverse background. Sounds like a little bit of mine. I've done all the same things. I could duplicate that and cut and paste it into mine. We've done sales. We've done retail. We've done wholesale, correspondent, affinity business relationship. Just in a few moments, give our listeners a little bit of your background. Where you been and how did you get to where you're at?
Sure. Well, I have to tell you, hearing you say three decades of experience really kind of threw me off quite a bit. But it,
yeah,
as you can see from the
How time flies when you're having fun, though. Yeah, I'm at four decades, so I relate to it. Yeah.
That's right. No, I was I was very fortunate. I started in the business actually with a company called Prudential Home Mortgage, going all the way back to that.
Oh yeah.
But I bring it up largely because it was a great place to start because it kind of came into the business without being beholden to any particular way of doing business. It was a great group of folks that kind of wanted to find a new way to originate loans, a new way to kind of serve their clients.
Right.
And frankly, that background has served me really well throughout the rest of my career. I've been fortunate to be with some great firms, large firms and kind of mid-sized firms. It was also interesting. I started in the systems world, which actually kind of, you know, if you understand the systems that drive it all, it kind of puts you in a great spot to be able to really execute.
Yeah, well, given the complexities of our industry now, systems background is probably a pretty good background to have.
Yeah,
but tell us how you ended up at Wholesale One. And give us some insights into how you landed at Wholesale One. And for
sure.
Those that are not familiar with the company, this is your opportunity to just kind of tell people about you.
Yeah, you bet. So I ran a wholesale at City Mortgage for several years back in the first part of the last decade. By virtue of that, I had a chance to work with a guy named Jeff McGinnis. Jeff is the CEO of Lenders One.
Yeah.
Lenders One is our sister cooperative. Started actually about 14 years ago as a platform for supporting mortgage bankers in a way to kind of use the power of the collective and in essence to kind of strengthen independent mortgage companies both for the in terms of negotiations with service providers as well as into the secondary market. I was fortunate about 2 years ago as AltaSource was looking at an opportunity to kind of take that cooperative model, that idea of constructive collaboration, if you will, in order to strengthen independent companies. They wanted to kind of take that out and put it down in another place within mortgage banking. Jeff reached out to me and said, you know, clearly wholesale is a place that, you know, perhaps we can all probably agree it has fought the idea of scale and efficiency with a vengeance over the course of many years. And maybe this is a place where we could create a platform through Wholesale One that would allow independent, autonomous mortgage broker companies and small banking companies to leverage their kind of collective strengths and create an environment where brokers,
good,
service providers, liquidity providers, all working in concert, ultimately to deliver a better experience for a borrower. And that's kind of a key in everything that we talk about. Is this,
yes, you know,
at the end of the day, this has got to be a better borrower experience.
Yep, and we had David Savage on of Mortgage Coach last week, and he said, we are financing a borrower experience, not a loan experience. I think that's a really important distinction you bring out there. How does Wholesale One relate to Lenders One? Actually, someone sent me a question on that just a moment ago. Is this a sister company or a subsidiary of Lenders One?
Sister company would be the better characterization. We are managed by the same parent, a division of AltaSource.
Okay.
But the co-ops operate independently. Obviously, Lenders One supporting the mortgage banker cooperative, or the mortgage banker companies. Wholesale One supporting the mortgage brokerage.
Good. See how that fits. Well, let's get into the whole wholesale channel. Certainly, it's been one of the most amazing comeback stories of all time. But looking over the next year, what are some of the headwinds that you're seeing and tailwinds facing the mortgage broker? And I imagine CFPB is at the top of the list, or is it from your perspective?
Yeah, you know what, David, it's interesting. I think to a certain degree, the headwinds the headwinds and tailwinds are perhaps the same in certain ways. If we think about two things, the complexity of the marketplace and the CFPB, the regulatory environment obviously plays into that, but also the shift ever so slowly, it would seem, to more of a purchase-focused market. We talked, I heard your guest talking a little bit about that earlier in the call. Both those things, one, they can certainly create a tighter market that can be harder for the origination firms. It can create a more complex execution that can be difficult for an origination firm. But on the other hand, two of the strengths of the broker, the independent mortgage brokers, their ability to react to change, and secondly, their ability to focus on purchase money. You know, throughout even today, when we have seen the share of the broker market being de minimis relative to where it used to be, their share of the purchase market is probably double what it is in the greater market.
Yeah.
Their ability to kind of serve their communities, right? They live in their communities. They reflect their own communities. Their ability to work their referral sources and their diligence around working those referral sources throughout the course of this kind of from the troubles to the present, I think sets the broker company up better for the upcoming market. And while life certainly is more complex than it has been, and the regulatory environment a big driver in that, brokers react to that. Brokers are more apt to be able to accept the change that has been placed on them and stay focused on serving their community.
Greg, I want to credit Joe Farr to having you be a guest on the broadcast. He knows you and knows of you, and so I'm going to toss the mic over to him. But I want to say, Joe, thanks so much for introducing us to Greg. I'm really enjoying getting to know him. Joe?
Greg, I wanted to go back a ways to say there have been many times and many things that have caused people in the market to predict the demise of the broker, and it hadn't happened. Things like loan officer comp was a big deal, and then disclosure differences were a big deal. So every time those things come up and the prediction is it's going to really hurt the brokers, it doesn't. So what do you attribute that to? And maybe you just answered that. Is it their ability to react?
Yeah, I think I think to a certain degree what we were just talking about, Joe, is related to that. I think we probably just to a certain degree, I think we underplayed how important the broker is to the purchase component of the marketplace. Even after the Great Troubles, there was still some element of the market that was purchase focused. I think the brokers were able to kind of live in that space in order to while the world was settling down. I think ultimately, their wholesale can be a very cost, if it's done correctly, can be a very cost effective way of doing business. I think I think folks perhaps came around to that. Took some time, frankly, but have come around to the idea that, hey, this is a way that I can extend my origination reach without having to put brick and mortar into each of these communities. This is a way that I can better connect the communities I'm trying to serve by leveraging the talents of independent, autonomous broker owners who are doing business the right way. And certainly you can make the case that if you are a broker today, that is not an accident. You made a very conscious decision that this is the way you want to operate, that you believe that you can serve your community and serve your borrower more effectively operating as an independent, operating as an autonomous business. You had plenty of opportunity to become a branch of somebody else. You had plenty of opportunity to go, go sell shoes. But you just decided, no, this is the profession I've chosen. This is the way I can best serve my customer. And I don't know that we appreciated just how strongly some broker owners, the ones who are here today, felt about that.
Right.
Well, that's
Andy?
So true.
Well, hey, Greg, thanks for being on the broadcast. Great to talk to you. I like the way you phrased that, broker owner, because I love dealing with sole proprietors who do stuff for me personally. It's just much more better. I think it's much better when the you're dealing with the owner. And so I like the concept of broker-owner as an originator. So you made the phrase you said was something like broker-owners who are operating the right way. So that's a great phrase. I love the way you coined that. So what does that mean? What are some of the keys in your mind for brokers to succeed in today's market?
Well, certainly, I think maybe two things that come to mind right away. One is, that they are selecting the right lending partners, the right service providers, but the right lending partners to be in business with. That, someone asked me a question in an interview a little while ago, and they asked me, what does the broker need to do to avoid causing the issues that occurred in 2008? And I was thrown by the question because what I finally said to the person is, I don't accept the premise of your question. To try and lay all of the challenges of the mortgage market at the feet of the broker is an absurd comment. What we all can do today, and then I think this is where, what can a broker be careful about when they're selecting their lending partner today, is if it sounds, select somebody that they believe is going to be in the business for a long time. I as a broker owner, I've made a decision to be in the business for a long time. Then they need to think, who's going to be there with me for a long time. And the other thing that we talked to our members about is the idea of looking for ways to expand the audience for their services. Part of that clearly is within the residential marketplace. What process can I use? What lender can I use to serve more borrowers? But taking it steps further and say, how do I expand the market that I'm currently serving? How do I look at getting into small commercial business if that fits what I'm trying to do? I mean, they need to have a thoughtful plan about am I doing business with the right folks in order to serve my marketplace, and is it wise for me to expand the marketplace that I currently serve? Kind of, what we talk about within Wholesale One is building out what we call a member revenue model. In essence, we try and make the argument that if you can be a part of Wholesale One, we're going to put you in a position where you can drive greater revenue than you would outside of Wholesale One. And a key element of that is, can we help you attract better talent? Can we put that talent in front of new borrowers that you wouldn't otherwise experience? Can we put that talent into a marketplace that you wouldn't otherwise have a chance to serve, like commercial, for example? I think that's a key, whether it's through Wholesale One or not. I think that's something that broker owners need to be thinking about. Am I doing business with the right folks? Am I expanding my business as best that I can?
So it's not just doing it on, I mean, not to make this into a commercial, but it's not just doing it on your own and trying to figure it out by yourself. Be part of a co-op or a group, or have common, similar people doing the same thing that you collaborate with to determine what best practices is for your industry. So in effect, joining lenders, wholesale, what's it called, Wholesale One?
I mean, look, interestingly, I mean, it is one of the things, apart from kind of more tangible benefits that we try and bring to the members around, discounted services or better than market execution on certain services and, connectivity to certain lending partners. Candidly, separate and apart from that, we had about 9 broker owners in almost a month ago for our first kind of member council. And I'll tell you the most striking thing that for me was the interaction between those broker owners. From they came from various marketplaces. They were different sizes. The idea that they that they felt a certain connection, that they weren't feeling so alone, which is all too often been the plight of the broker owner. There was a real power in that. Frankly, more than I had realized prior to the meeting.
Wow, that's neat. That's neat to hear, and it's understandable. That's great.
So
Alice,
Greg,
let's
hi,
get you
this
in on this
Alice.
Discussion.
Yeah, hi. Well, I just have a quick question. As you look at the things that work in favor for the brokers or against them in different market forces, so the purchase market should be helping them out. Do you think that's a good thing for the brokers right now?
Yeah, I really do. I really do. I've had the good fortune of working for some great firms, both large and small. And one of the things that I certainly saw at some of the larger firms, I'll say it this way. I think if you look at some of the larger depositories, many of them are thinking about the mortgage business, in my mind, as more of a mechanism for serving that part of their customer base that they are interested in in deepening the relationships with. That may have a purchase component to it, provided that that borrower or that depositor is going to be looking to buy a home. But the focus on that kind of really takes away from the ability to get outside the walls of a branch, as an example, and go connect with the community and deepen the relationship with referral partners. The broker has never abdicated that position of connection with the community and connection with the referral partner. So I do very much see that broker owner having a real great leverage point within the purchase market. You know, one of the things I used to say to my folks quite a bit is, we happen to be in the mortgage industry, but we're in the comfort business. That's what we really sell people is the comfort at a time when they are incredibly stressed and really confused. And that confusion and that stress is only going to increase given the the ongoing complexity of our industry right now. In my mind, that's where a broker thrives, right? Their ability to be able to sit across the table from somebody, either literally or metaphorically, and just say, regardless of what you're trying to do, I am going to be able to help you with that, because that's my role. My role is to find the best place to fund your deal and to make sure you don't lose any sleep.
That, you know, you look at the broker, their contribution. A lot of people say, well, it's no different there. Anyone could do that, but I think they have a track record of doing it very, very well, sitting across the table and providing that comfort. Let's talk a little bit about the whole wholesale market and relationship, the entire industry. How do you see the revitalization of the wholesale market benefit the industry overall? Do you see it as a benefit?
I do, sir. And I'll tell you, one of the again, this goes back to something I kind of alluded to before. I mean, wholesale can be a great way of doing business. It can be a very efficient way and a very economical way of doing business, which is not to say it's easy. It's not to say that there isn't risk involved in it. And,
yeah.
We were talking before the call a little bit and saying, but we are in the risk management business. We're not in the risk avoidance business. If you can have the right control, which begins with the idea, I want to be in wholesale. I'm not going to dabble in it. I really want to be in wholesale. But if you have the right people and the right systems in place, and you can say, I can extend the reach of my lending arm by utilizing the talents of these independent broker owners and their staff who are better suited to deliver my product, perhaps in certain areas, then that's where. To me, that's where it has more of an industry-wide effect beyond just any individual company.
Yeah, I agree. I'm going to toss the mic over to Joe. Can I keep an eye on the clock here? We have just about 7 minutes left in the broadcast, so want to get all of the questions answered as we can. Joe? Joe? Are we missing Joe? Probably got his mic
no,
off.
No, you're...
Go into
yeah,
the question.
I was muted. Sorry about that. So... the Provident settlement that was mentioned earlier in the call, let's talk a little bit about that as it relates to brokers and the wholesale lender relationship. And I know it was pretty dated activity, but does it throw any concern into an environment where we're trying to grow the wholesale environment?
Yeah, Joe. You know, and I'll allow that. I probably haven't taken as much time yet today to realize. I was just reading about it. I guess today is, and I haven't taken as much time to really assimilate it as I should. My gut reaction with twofold. One is, again, it is related to, as I recall, incidents pre 2011, and certainly the. You know, a lot has changed just in the ensuing 3 or 4 years.
Pre-LO comp rule.
Right. I'm not discounting the importance of it, therefore, but I think it does have to be taken relative to the time frame in which it was, in which the incidents, quote unquote, occurred. I'm not sure, David, who who made a comment earlier about saying, is there a as part of the motivation pain simply to say, oh, let's just pay this and move on? We don't believe that exists anymore because so much has changed and we can afford to pay it. Let's not let that be a distraction for what can come forward. I think there may be part of that. My other reaction would be this: well, $9 million would certainly be a lot of money for me. On the other hand, you know, it'd be really easy to say, "Oh, look, see this fine is going out that shows you wholesale is still a risky place to be." Well, I can think of an awful lot of retail lenders who have paid significant fines as well. I come back to the comment I made before: we are in the risk business. And part of that risk is just having a process that ensures we're doing business the right way with the right partners.
Let's go over to Mr. Process on that note, Andy Schell.
Hey, Dave. Well, all right, Greg. So here you go. So we want to avoid those risks from the past. We want to do it better this time. We want to do it right the first time and every time. So, you know, we as lenders now are going to be working with wholesale to make this happen. So what are some of the keys to success going forward?
Yeah, one of the things I've said around here a long time is something that served me well for many years is long before know your customer was a catchphrase. We really practiced that religion. But Citigroup, UBS both, I mean, you know, just, it was more important to make sure as a wholesaler, we knew exactly who we were going to be, you know, use the phrase, sitting across the table with. Were they doing business the right way? Were they sharing our corporate values, in essence, in terms of growing the business? And did we have the appropriate controls in place with respect to Mr. President Reagan about trust and verify that all those things were in fact happening? I think it still starts with that today. Are you vetting your clients correctly? Are you vetting your counterparties correctly? It's interesting. It would be an interesting phenomenon, I guess, to see is that as TRID, while many of the wholesalers we have talked to are still kind of finalizing how TRID will be implemented from a process standpoint, there's certainly a component of that where there'll be the need to wrench back some of the control that today may otherwise be in the hands of the originator. It'll be interesting to see whether that actually makes folks look at wholesale as a safer place to do business, or more safe than it was than it has been. I would tell you, I mean, I think one of the things we're trying to do within the Wholesale One platform is just our belief, anyway, is this. The transaction flows best when all the players in it are playing to their core competency. So if you are a lending institution, then develop policies that make the most sense for what you are trying to achieve. Price the loan according to the risk you believe you have in it. Underwrite the loan to the criteria that you support that particular risk-reward paradigm. If you're an origination firm, seek out the right counterparties, serve your customer as best you can, select lending partners that you think are going to help you grow your business. One of our particular providers on the platform happens to be a processing unit. If I'm an origination firm, but I really don't want to be a processing, if that's what I really want to do, then find a processing partner who can support yourself, who can port your broker business operationally and connect you more efficiently into that lender's pipeline. If you're a lender, look at processes that will allow the originator to be that broker owner to act independently, but also a focus on the origination component of what they do, and deliver product into your pipeline that is of a better quality, a more streamlined delivery, so that your folks can act more effectively. And none of that necessarily is easy, but all those solutions are out there. And I think if you put them together in the right interconnectivity, wholesale becomes a really powerful component of the marketplace.
Got one time for one quick last question, Alice.
Well, thanks for all that, Greg. It was interesting as you were going down that path. You know, that is something that we see in the market is certainly that the brokers are all have varying different service models that they want. And I even have some of my broker customers, one of them said, I'm just a risk chicken. I don't want to underwrite ever. And but you do have many of them that want to move into that, what we would call a mini correspondent step,
yeah.
You know, that not delegated correspondent level. Is that a good step for a broker who doesn't ever plan to be full on a correspondent, you know, especially with the CFPB guidance out there?
Yeah, I guess it does come down to the motivation. What was the motivation behind making the move? If it's got to do with some kind of compensation issue, I think I'm not sure that is the right move. But to the extent that you have aspirations to grow your company into more of a correspondent, to the extent you have the right mindset. It's an interesting, the player you just mentioned, I mean, there's somebody who clearly says, I know who I am. I know what I do best. That's not what I have no aspiration to become more than what I am. There's nothing wrong with that. That's somebody who's pretty self-aware. If you're consciously making the decision and you understand the ramifications around the risk and the reward attached to it, I think it can be.
Yeah.
And frankly, my gut has always, I thought of all the things the CFPB has put out, their guidance around the kind of mini correspondent, emerging banker, non-delegated, choose the correct euphemism.
Yes.
I thought was fairly clear.
It was good. It was
relative to other.
It was
stuff,
relatively
right?
clear. I look at the clock. Yeah. We're out of time, Greg. It's really been good to have you here. Appreciate you so much joining in with the broadcast. There's a lot to talk about on this topic. Look forward to having you back. I wish you continued success at Wholesale One, folks. We're out of time. Good to have you with us. Appreciate you. Tell others about the broadcast and see you back here next week.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week and thank you for listening.